When you wake up in the morning, are you raring to go? Or do you think to yourself, what could possibly be the point? Doing what works will help you see it isn't too late to go after your dreams. We talk with experts about everything from getting in shape to finding work you love. We're your guide to a better life. Now, here's your host for Doing What Works, Maureen Anderson. Are you ready to make a move? I mean that literally. Daryl Anderson, my husband and producer, knows all too well how, shall we say, less than enchanted I am with living in a small town, and I mean really small town. But he has one thing going for him in that respect, and that is that I hate to move. If you share that hatred, but you do have a move on the horizon, we want to help make it much less painful today. We have an expert on that subject with us. His name is Scott Michael. He is President and CEO of the American Moving and Storage Association. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Hello, Maureen.
I have a confession to make. I didn't know there was an American Moving and Storage Association. What do you want to tell us about that organization?
Well, there's an association for just about everything, and we represent the professional moving industry, the folks that are really professionals at what they do. The ones that you can turn to help alleviate some of those concerns that you've got.
How did you rise to the top of that organization?
Well, I've been here for 22 years, just learning different aspects of the business and working my way through, trying to learn more about how the industry works and different things that we can do as an association. We've got 4,000 members that range from the large van lines that everyone's heard of to the local affiliates that are in each town to help people move. And so I've gotten to know a lot of them over the years and really understand their business. A lot of great people in the business, a lot of good families in the industry that have their name on the company and a lot of family businesses that really care about what they do.
For the person who is contemplating a move, is there a good time of the year to do that?
Your best bet for moving is to pick a time that's outside of the busy summer season. The summer months are when everybody tries to move, and so it gets really crazy. June's the busiest month of the year, so we're excited to have that behind us. But the other months of the year when you can settle down and not have as much competition for your business is really gonna be a lot easier time to move when it's not during the heat of the summer. The movers will be able to take their time and give you the better crews to help with the move.
How do you know if you need a professional mover versus just renting a U-Haul, for example?
Well, that's going to be an individual decision that different people have different needs. And we find there's about a lot of people, there's about 3 million interstate moves that take place each year, and only about 800,000 of those are using a professional mover. So a lot of people decide to do it themselves. A lot of people try to do it themselves, and maybe they learn their lessons from that time and decide the next time they're gonna hire a professional to help out. So it really depends on the situation that you have, how much you want to be involved in the process, and what concerns you have about doing it yourself and what you're able to handle. It doesn't hurt if you're thinking about doing it yourself. It doesn't hurt to try and get some quotes from some professionals just to see what the difference in price might be. And you might find it costs less than you expect to do it with a professional.
When you said people sometimes try doing it themselves and then the next time know better, what kinds of things have gone wrong?
There's all kinds of things that could go wrong if you try and do it yourself. You've got a lot of heavy lifting. You maybe are going to rely on your friends to come and help out, and they may not be the most reliable people, or they might not be the strong movers. They might not take as good of care of your things as you'd like them to do. And if you're trying to do it yourself, if you're doing the driving yourself, you may not be familiar with driving a large rental van. We find occasionally people don't know where they're going and rely on their regular GPS and find themselves with a low-hanging bridge that the truck can't navigate. And so we hear about bridge strikes occasionally. So there's just all kinds of things that if you're not used to driving a big truck, if you're not used to heavy lifting, if you're not used to how to load the truck or how to prepare the shipment, there's a lot of things that could go wrong in terms of damage to items or even to the equipment itself.
What do you do when you're tooling down the highway and you realize that your truck might be too high for the next obstacle?
You want to see how you can safely stop and get out of the situation. I know on a lot of highways there are signs warning about the next, the upcoming low-hanging bridges. And so you might have time to take an exit before you get to that overpass. There might be some way to find an alternate route if you're doing that. If you find yourself right up in front of it, then you've got to figure out how to back out of the situation, and that's not going to be easy, especially if there's other traffic around.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily a great place for a U-turn and so on. I mean, I could seriously see people just being stuck for a while.
There certainly could be that a lot of a problem in that case, and you might need to get some law enforcement folks to help redirect traffic so that you can get out of there. Hopefully you won't find yourself in that situation, and you'll have carefully mapped out a route that doesn't have the low bridges, your rental truck may not be too high, so it may not be too much of an issue. But there certainly are areas where that could be a challenge.
I recently traversed a part of highway where there was a big construction project going on, and there were concrete barriers on both sides of what was a very narrow lane. It was on
an
interstate.
That can be a scary drive, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And to try to do, I mean, we have a Honda Accord, so theoretically, no problem. But it was at night. There was just something about the particular stretch of road where I didn't know if we'd make it. It was that treacherous. And to think of having a vehicle larger than what we had just terrifies me.
I think the bigger issue is you're not comfortable with a different vehicle sometimes. If it's your personal car that you're used to driving all the time, you're a lot more comfortable with that than if you're dealing with something that you're not familiar with.
And the fact that it's loaded with things that may or may not be packed for a cross-country trip makes it all the more treacherous.
You definitely want to make sure that the items are braced and blocked so that they're not going to be flopping around as much. And both within the individual containers, you want to make sure that the individual boxes are packed tight and carefully. But then the way you load the truck so that the items, they're probably going to shift a little bit in transit, but you don't want them shifting too much and falling and breaking things.
Having made a few moves myself, I can imagine that particular aspect of it alone, just the properly packing things so they don't move around and tip over and bump against each other or rub against each other, is probably one of the more valuable services I think that a professional mover could provide.
Certainly, if you care about the items that you own, you want to take care of them, and so you want to make sure that they're packed and in a way that's going to make sure they get to the other end of the move in good shape. And you can certainly try to do the best you can, but it might be worth hiring a professional to make sure that they've got them carefully stowed, and if something does go wrong, then the professional will be liable for replacing or repairing the items that got damaged. So you want to make sure that they can take care of that. And if you're trying to do it yourself, make sure that you're putting the heavier objects at the bottom of the box and the lighter ones on the top. You don't want a bowling ball on top of your China to crush it. You want to have the heavier things down at the bottom.
I want to step back from tips, although I want to get back into more tips later in the program. Scott, but anybody who has moved has probably had the experience where they pack something away in a cardboard box. They get to the destination. They don't get around to unpacking it. Years later, it's time to move again, and they haven't missed whatever's inside, which tells me a lot of us just have way too much stuff. And I think the first step when you're contemplating a move is to call anything you can, because you've just eliminated a lot of what we've been talking about in terms of worry if you don't have it to begin with.
That's a great tip, and definitely great advice to start with looking at what you have. And if there are things that you can purge, you can maybe save some money by doing a garage sale and selling some of the stuff or taking it to a consignment shop or and if that doesn't make sense for you, then maybe you can find someone that's more needy than you that you can donate it to and get it to someone that needs it more than you do. But definitely culling through what's in your home ahead of time and identifying what really doesn't need to come along with you is a good tip.
Is there an art to moving on stuff? For example, I think of the appliance or the couch that's sitting on the curb. Apparently, that's a very effective way to move something on. I still can't get my arms around it, but...
Well, in my neighborhood, at least, if you get that stuff out to the curb at the start of the weekend, it tends to move better than other times of the week. But I just can't imagine that. But it certainly does seem to find that those get to a better home pretty quickly in a lot of cases.
And I've also heard garage sales, just forget it. It's so much work, and you end up making $12.
I think it really depends on the personality of the individual involved. Some people just thrive on interacting with people and having a bunch of folks come over and look at everything and talk to you about the different items, and other people don't want to be hassled by it. And so in that case, it may be better to look for a Goodwill or some other type of charitable organization that can take the items off of your hands so that you don't have to even mess with the garage sale.
You might have to get creative. We're offloading some carpet, Daryl, and what did it involve? We finally had to contact someone up here in Fargo who works with
the carpet
families.
That we bought and never installed.
Yeah, I didn't want to.
Home renovation project.
Yes.
Gone awry. Exactly. Well, that was a situation where we'd purchased the carpet and the retailer that we bought it from agreed to store it or warehouse it until we needed to install it, which never happened.
It never happened.
Right.
They needed to get the space freed up. So we ended up contacting an organization that took building materials and repurposed them.
Mm-hmm.
And carpet, obviously, is a building material for anyone
right.
doing new construction, that kind of thing. So we ended up donating it to them. And there are, tons of organizations. Goodwill comes to mind, others and so on, that will take things off your hands and find a good home for it for you. So.
Right.
We're talking moving today with the president of the American Moving and Storage Association, Scott Michael. Lots more to come on Doing What Works. If you're moving and you want to save yourself the expense of a professional mover, you might be adding expenses. Scott Michael joins us. He's president and CEO of the American Moving and Storage Association. You can learn more at moving.org. Scott, is there a formula for deciding whether you need a professional mover?
I think the formula really boils down to how much work you want to put into the move yourself. And if you're physically not capable of lifting the heavy boxes and the furniture, then you really need to turn to someone to help you, and you don't want to get injured. That's the main thing, is the health and well-being of yourself. And if you've got friends or relatives helping you, you want to make sure that they don't get injured either from trying to do more than they're physically capable of doing in a move. In those situations, you might want to take a look, and I'm glad you mentioned our website, moving.org. We've got some movers on there. You can do a search for movers in your community to help find a professional mover. We call them a pro mover in your area that could help you with that.
I read somewhere recently that if you're getting bids for something, it means that the project is big. It's important, and you don't want to get in a situation where you're just taking the lowest bidder because of what I just said. It's an important deal. So when you made the suggestion to get estimates, it made me wonder exactly that. Are you only price shopping, or what kinds of things should you look for in a mover?
That's a great point, that you don't want to always pick the lowest option. In many cases, you get what you pay for, and I think when you're getting these estimates, you really are trying to do more than just get a price. You're trying to get a sense of how these people are going to take care of your items. you're basically paying someone to drive off with everything that you care about. So you want to make sure that this is someone that you can trust. And so you want to make sure that you understand what their plan is. Find out, do they have a license? What's their license number? Do they have insurance? What are the different coverage options for you? What are the different things that they're going to do? How are they going to take care of the items that you care about?
Do you trust online reviews of the company? Should you trust those?
You certainly can use that as one resource. You can't believe everything you see on the Internet, of course, but that is certainly a resource to look at, is to see what other experience other people have had with them. You can look up their Better Business Bureau rankings or look through other types of online review services to see what experiences people have had with this company. Just to, take that information with a grain of salt, and realize that if a mover has handled 5 moves and they have 3 complaints, that's different than a mover that's handled 5 million moves and had 10 complaints. So you can't just look at the total number of complaints that they have. You have to gauge the size of the universe you're talking about in terms of the company.
You'll want an agreement in writing, but most of us aren't attorneys, so what kinds of things should you look for in an agreement?
You want to make sure that the agreement spells out what exactly is going to be moved, where you're moving to and from, and specifies the cost. You need to have a written estimate that spells out what the cost of the move is going to be. In many cases, there may be some options involved. If you need this additional service, it's going to cost this additional amount. So you just want to understand the different cost factors for different things. And if you're going to have them professionally pack the shipment as well as move it, what's the cost for the packing? It should have a breakdown of the different charges, and make sure that you understand what each of the charges are. If there's any part of the agreement that you don't understand, ask the mover to explain it to you. And if you get multiple people doing estimates, you can maybe ask one of them about what their competitor's wording says if you don't understand it. Maybe they can help explain it.
Any red flags you want people to know about?
There's a lot of red flags that you can look for in terms of movers. The first one I would say is make sure that they have a physical address. There are some websites that we run across where people are claiming to be movers, but you can't ever find where they're actually located. A legitimate mover will have an actual address, a business address, a location. They're going to have a place to park their trucks, and in many cases they'll have a warehouse where they can provide storage if you need that. So make sure that they have an actual physical address. It's not just an address for a mailbox place. And that they show where they're located. They need to have their license numbers on their website, on their information showing that they have a license, and you should be able to check that out as well. I think red flags, if they're not willing to come to your home and give you an estimate in person, that's certainly a concern. Why aren't they willing to do that? If they're asking for a down payment that's really high, that seems excessively high compared to some of the other ones, they shouldn't be asking for more than a couple $100 in terms of a down payment. They're going to have your items, so they have some leverage to make sure that you pay when it gets delivered.
When we come back, how much will a move cost, and is it worth it to pay someone to pack for you? That's ahead on Doing What Works. You're moving, but you don't know whether to pay your professional mover, whom you have decided to hire. You don't know if you should pay that person to pack for you. Before I ask Scott Michael that question, he's from moving.org. Scott, I want you to tell us, in general, if you can, how much it will cost to move. Let's say it's a family of 4 and they live in a 1,500-square-foot home. Any idea what a fully furnished home would cost to move across the country?
Yeah, that's going to be the difference in price. If you're talking about a move that's going all the way across the country, it's going to cost thousands of dollars. If you're talking about a shorter distance move that's just across town, the cost is going to be much less. It's probably going to be an hourly rate depending upon how much you have and how long it takes the crew to pack it, load it, and then unload it on the other end. So the cost is going to vary greatly depending upon the two main factors, how much you have and how far you're traveling. It's definitely going to be in the thousands of dollars if you're moving across country with a fair amount of items. It's just really a matter of how much you have. in terms of that. And the best thing to do is to get multiple estimates from legitimate companies. You can find some movers on our moving.org website. We have 2,800 pro movers that are part of our association. We have 4,000 members total, and 2,800 of them have been identified as pro movers. So there's a lot to choose from. You should be able to find some that are in your particular area so that you can get more than one company to give you estimates and see what the typical range is from these professionals identifying what you have.
I never thought about that, but of course you need a professional mover to move across town, because you still can't put your couch in your the trunk of
your Honda Accord is not gonna hold a giant couch.
Okay.
So even if you're not trying to escape a small town, if you're just trying to move across a small town, you still may.
You listen, don't you? So I know people, and I used to be one of them, who only cleaned the house when company was coming. So every so often they would make sure they invited somebody over or the house would never get cleaned. And I think some people approach clutter that way. They just declutter in advance of the next move. So that person doesn't seem like someone for whom someone else should be packing, because part of the zen of it all is getting rid of stuff as you pack. Now, having said that, is it worth it to pay somebody to pack for you?
You really need to decide how much you feel that you can protect the items, how breakable they are, and how much you want to rely on someone else to do that. If you have a professional packing your china, they'll make sure that they've got all the plates properly prepared. They're using a specially designed box that's going to handle the extra weight of a lot of fully loaded china, and will have in the dish pack is what they call it. It'll have slots to help get everything stable and hold it in place. So you'll have the right equipment. You'll have the right type of preparation for the items to put it in a way that it's going to be protected and safe on the other end. If you want to take your chances, you may find that it gets to the destination without any damage, or maybe only a couple things are chipped or broken, and the cost of replacing a couple of those items is less than what it would have cost you to hire a professional to pack the items. So you're going to have to decide where you want to spend your money. If you want to spend some of that on replacing something that gets broken, or if you want to pay up front to have somebody protect it. If you've got a lot of things that are a lot of stuffed animals that aren't likely to get broken by being jostled, then that's probably not something that you need a professional to pack.
It seems like a lot of disputes would arise over, was it a packing error or a loading of the truck error?
Right. The most of the things that if you have the items in the box carefully and properly prepared, then you should be able to load them just about anywhere in the truck and have them be safe. So making sure that they're properly packed goes a long way to ensuring that's an issue. If you have two different people packing and loading, then there could be disputes about who's responsible for the damage. But if the item was in a box that the customer packed themselves, the mover's not going to accept liability for anything that's broken in that. They're just going to say that was the fault of the poor packing.
Huh. And they'll always win? Is that what you're saying in court? Or do these things not go to court very often?
I think in most cases you're not going to spend the money on an attorney to argue over that type of a thing. We do have an alternative arbitration process that we help people with. We use the National Arbitration Forum, which is up in Minnesota, and they have a panel of retired judges that can arbitrate disputes about loss and damage claims. And they work with a number of these types of cases. It's a much cheaper way to resolve disputes than through litigation, where you have to pay the attorney's fees and all of that. So we find that a lot of people like the arbitration process much better than going to court. And in terms of arbitration, the arbiter is going to look at the facts and identify you know, what they know and what can be identified. And I would think most of the time if they see that the customer packed the box themselves, that they're probably not going to hold the mover responsible for something that went wrong with the packing. If the box is lost, that's different because, you know, that had nothing to do with how it was packed. That was simply making sure that it got to the other end. So that's an entirely different situation.
Without giving people a course in how to pack, what's the one thing you wish we would stop doing when we pack?
Well, let me turn it into a positive. The best thing that you can do is have some of the original packaging for things like your electronic devices. If you can use the manufacturer's boxes, they've got, in many cases, you know, molded styrofoam that fits exactly around the electronic component. So in a lot of cases, that's a great way to protect your things if you're trying to pack it yourself, if you still have those original boxes. Of course, that contributes to the clutter in your house sometimes, so a lot of people get rid of that. But and so you don't have it. And if you don't have it, then make sure you don't use too large of a box for the items that you have. If you have things that are heavy, don't put a lot of heavy things in a box. Then it becomes too hard to lift that box, and either you or the mover could get injured. Use smaller boxes that things can fit into. If you're packing a bunch of books, put them in a small box so that you can lift it without getting injured.
You should have seen Daryl smile when you made the suggestion to pack things in the box they came in.
The original container, yes.
Yeah. I maintain we wouldn't need the size house we have if we didn't have every box that everything has ever come in.
I was feeling pretty smug there for a moment
until
you said
that about
something
the clutter.
About it being clutter.
Yeah.
And I thought, doggone it.
You know what I found helps? I told myself what I read somewhere, that every castle has a dungeon. Oh, boy, do we have a dungeon. Our basement is one great big dungeon. But I digress. We are talking about how to make your next move, your next literal move, that is, less painful. And we'll be back with more advice from Scott Michael in just a moment on Doing What Works. Back with Doing What Works, I'm your host, Maureen Anderson, and one of the most interesting things I read when I was reading up on my guest today, Scott Michael, who is president and CEO of the American Moving and Storage Association, was that so many of us get stuck on the fact that we have to move in the summertime, and that creates as many problems as it solves. Scott, you mentioned at the top of the program that summer is the busiest time for movers. Is that the main reason it's creating as many problems as it solves?
Exactly. We've got half of our customers trying to move in just a few months over the summer. And so movers are stretched to the limit. They're working 12, 15-hour days. They're working 6, 7 days a week, and they get really tired. And it's hot out and just really not a pleasant environment. So I think you find in the other times of the year, you get much fresher crews. You get people that know what they're doing. Sometimes they have to bring in extra temporary help over the summer that don't do this full time, and so the other times of the year you're going to get the professionals that have been trained that know what they're doing, and you should have a better experience if you try and move outside of those peak summer months.
Peak winter month, or not peak winter month, but the winter months would be tricky for all the obvious reasons of snow, depending on what part of the country. I mean, trucks don't strike me as that stable.
Well, you find that movers have a lot of experience driving in a lot of different weather conditions. We've got a lot of great drivers out there that have been in the business for decades and really have learned how to deal with a lot of things. And certainly, if you're going into a bad weather situation, they've got all weather tires. You've got chains you can put on the tires, and a lot of these folks know what they're doing and can really do that. I think the other thing is if you've got a loaded truck, you've got a lot of weight that's really holding it down, and perhaps would be better than a lighter weight like your Accord that maybe doesn't have as much traction because it doesn't have as much weight pushing down on the ice. The other thing that movers can do if you've got a little flexibility is maybe wait out the storm and try and make that delivery after the storm has passed through.
There are special considerations with kids and pets and plants. Let's quickly cover one or two with each. Kids, you want to keep their favorite stuffed animal handy, not buried in a box somewhere.
It's really a challenge for a lot of children, and it depends on the child, of course. Having three kids myself, I know they're all different and different, experience things in different ways, and so you know more about your kids than anyone, and just be on the lookout for what's going to be different for them and what they need to see. But the unknown, the fear of the unknown is definitely hard for them, and wanting to be able to make friends is key. And that's something that I know a lot of people try and move between school years in the summer, but then the kids get to the new place and they've got a month or two before school starts and they don't know anyone. And if you're moving during the school year, they have that built-in network of school friends that they meet immediately, and so that does help in many cases with that transition. They're busy, they're active, they're not just sitting around at home like in the summer with nothing to do. They've got something to do, and so they don't have time to think about the change as much, perhaps.
And with pets, it's
in many ways the same. Something that's new and different, your pet may react in very strange ways to the unknown. I know when we have some stranger come to our house, the dogs do not like that, and it takes a while for them to get used to any kind of a change. So take care of the pets, watch what they're doing. If you can, contain them in a smaller area for the time being until they can get familiar and comfortable with their new home. You don't want the cat to try and run back to their old house, especially if you moved across country. That's a long way to go.
Well, it happens. Don't pets, aren't they notorious for trying to escape?
Absolutely. Yeah, if they're not, they need to really learn that this is home now and it's okay to stay here. So keep them on a leash while you've got them getting used to the new place. And you can't really do that with the kids, but with the pets at least, try and keep them contained so that they know that this is the place to be and that this is okay to still be here. And after a few days, they should get acclimated. They should see that okay, the same people are here. My litter box, my toys are here. It's maybe okay that this is an okay place to be, and you can slowly relax some of those limitations for them.
But if the pet has been planning to make a break for it, this is a great opportunity, it sounds like.
I've got one that it definitely is always planning on making a break for it. And so it's important to have the identification on the tag. And, you've got, in most cases, the identification, like right now we have our home address and home phone number on the tag. If you're moving, that isn't going to help anymore. So you want to make sure that you're updating the contact information on the tags on your pets to your new contact information so that if they do make a break for it successfully and someone finds them, they can get them returned back to you.
And if you don't want them found, that's a good opportunity.
Absolutely. That's a great tip.
Lose Fluffy somehow or another. During
not
as long as you're talking about
that.
The pets.
Yeah.
If your wife disappears, that's a whole other deal, I guess.
No, that's not so good. And
Stay tuned for just a few more minutes with Scott Michael on Doing What Works. You are listening to Doing What Works. I'm your host, Maureen Anderson, and when Daryl Anderson, my husband and producer, suggested that our wheel covers get painted because the silvery stuff was peeling off, I thought, I didn't even really notice we had wheel covers, and then for weeks, that's all I saw when I looked at cars driving by, is the wheel covers. You know how it goes. When you need something, suddenly you become a student of that, and you want to learn everything if you're like me. And if you're about to make a move and are about to hire a professional mover, maybe you would like a website to get you started and help you get organized. That website is moving.org, and we have the privilege of talking with Scott Michael today. He is the president and CEO of the American Moving and Storage Association. And, Scott, if it's all right with you, I want to spend the last few minutes of the program talking about career paths for people who are interested in your line of work. I've always thought that if I could wrangle a truck through all kinds of weather, that being a truck driver would be a fun profession, believe it or not. It just seems like a great way to always have your the view out your office window changing.
There's a lot of people that just really thrive on that lifestyle, and we've got some great professional van operators that really are the backbone of our industry and do a great job with their customers, do a great job with driving the big rig, and it's a great lifestyle for them. It's a hard life, though, because you're away from home so much. And some of the most successful ones are team drivers, where the husband and wife drive together so that they can spend time together and not be away from home completely. But it's an interesting lifestyle, and these folks, there's some of them are just doing the greatest job at this. And we try and honor the best of the industry every year at our conference with our Van Driver Awards. To recognize the ones that are really stepping up and doing a great job for their customers.
What constitutes a great job? Of course, being on time, no complaints. What else?
I think it's really a matter of making the customers feel comfortable with you. You're basically turning over all of your life's possessions to this driver and trusting that they're going to know what they're doing and are going to get them to your new home safely and in a timely manner. And so building that rapport is key. You want to exhibit that professionalism that shows that you know what you're doing. Like I said before, a lot of these guys have been doing this for decades and really have a great deal of experience and have got a lot of training to know how to do things. You want to make sure that you can show the customer you care about their home, that you're going to protect their carpeting, lay down some mats to make sure that you're not tracking mud all over the house, protect the furniture and the doors and pad and wrap everything to take care of things. It's not just a matter of sitting behind the wheel. There's a lot of freight companies where that's all the driver does is just drives the truck from one destination to another and someone else does all the offloading with the forklift. But in the household goods industry, The drivers are involved in the move from start to finish. They're packing, they're loading the truck, they're doing a lot more than just driving.
In the interest of realizing there's so much more to the relationship than just the moving professional, what can we as customers do to be the dream customer?
I think it's good to do your research ahead of time. You've mentioned our website, and I appreciate that. We've recently refreshed our moving.org website to have a lot of great information on there about moving. There's lots of tips. There's pamphlets that you can get, a lot of good information to learn about what to expect. The federal government also has a good website called protectyourmove.gov that has more information about moving. So just educating yourself about what to expect is really going to be helpful. I think you talked about being organized and going through ahead of time and identifying what you don't really want to move, what you can donate and give away. Just being organized to know where you want everything to go is very helpful.
And having that on a label, on the box.
Absolutely. If you wanted to know if you're going to pack it and know where the box should go, if you can identify either with all the green stickers go in the living room and all the pink stickers go in the kitchen. If you don't want to write the words down on there, just have some kind of an organizational system to know where things should go.
10 seconds, what do you like the best about your job?
Oh, it's just great people in the business. There's a lot of wonderful folks in the moving industry that it's been great to work for them.
I really appreciate you giving us a little tour of that industry today, Scott.
Thanks so much
for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Scott Michael, you bet. Scott Michael, moving.org, thank you so much for listening to this edition of Doing What Works.